Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 284. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. Find the show notes for today's episode by going to the website, higherhumanperformance.com. It is episode 284, Leadership Reality Check. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about, and we'll do it next. I'm glad that you're here. My name is Randy Kentrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, brought to you as always by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A, Network, LLC. Bula Network is an executive and leadership coaching company. Employee engagement, team feedback, peer review. These are just some of the many tools for workplace reality checks. I think there are three important questions for every leader, and they are, how do I see myself? How do others see me? How do I want to be seen? Now, those aren't the only questions, but those are just some of the questions that I think are really important for you to be asking yourself as a leader. How do I see myself? How do others see me? And how do I want to be seen? This is the stuff of leadership reality check. Now, some leaders, I'm thinking of you, Donald Trump, they don't much care about reality. Well, that's not true. Just kind of appears that way. I mean, the Donald, he is fully capable of living in his own reality, but, you know, he's capable of creating that reality as well. It's entertaining. I mean, obviously, as I hit the record button, we are in the throes of October 2015, and the Donald is lobbying and running and campaigning for the presidency of our great country. Very entertaining. Now, time will tell if it's going to be effective in getting him elected to the highest office in our country. But there's little doubt that Trump has genuinely, for real, he's got a really high opinion of himself. And it's equally clear that he is not concerned in the least with those last two questions. How do others see me? How do I want to be seen? Well, okay, he might be interested in that third one. But he's not terribly concerned, he doesn't seem to be, in how do others see me. He's going to roll the way he's going to roll. And, well, you just well build a bridge and get over it. And I admit I rather do enjoy his lack of concern for political correctness. It's kind of entertaining, and it certainly is a little bit refreshing, and I'm clearly not alone because the polls show that he continues to elevate his popularity. Okay, well, you're not Donald Trump. I'm sure not. You're probably concerned about what people think about you. You're probably concerned, rightfully so, about what people say about you. That includes your boss. That includes the people that you have to answer to, and it's especially true of your team. And you likely want to know what both groups think about you. Now, everybody loves a positive review. Does your company, do you do annual reviews, performance reviews, or whatever you call them? Lots of companies do. Really small ones don't, but many do. A board of directors, they can deliver a new 3-year contract to the CEO, maybe give him some substantial bump in pay, 20%. Increase in pay, maybe throw some additional stock options his way. A big vote of confidence, to be sure. I mean, how can he not feel great about himself after that kind of a meeting, that kind of a session? But he spends $60,000 to have a consulting firm come and do a study of how his executive team feels about working with and for him. It's got guaranteed anonymity. So you guys and gals, y'all are all safe to say what you want to say about the boss, says the consulting firm. Takes 6 months to complete this. Includes 32 executives. And there's a mixed bag of results, but, there's no really wild variations in the answers and in the outcome. These are professional people. I mean, nobody's going to pull a Trump card and say what they really think. But overall, the characterization of this report is best summed up in a single word. Well, I guess it's a word. We talk about it like it's a word. Meh. Yeah, that's the word. Meh. 60 grand for meh. It's a really lukewarm result. Do you think the CEO cares much? I mean, after all, the board, they have expressed high confidence in him. He's got a new 3-year contract. He's got 20% bigger pay. Potentially millions in stock options. No, he doesn't care. I mean, he only did the study to show how much he values what his team thinks about him. It's window dressing. His reality check, it was delivered by the board. And that alternate reality with his executive team, much less important to him. Sure, the fact that he's running a publicly traded $900 million company with significant revenue and profit growth, yes, that impacts it all. He's not Trump, but he's not you. And he's not me. So let's get down to the real world where far more of us live. You know, even the city manager of a multi-thousand personnel city government with an annual budget approaching $500 million or the CEO of a privately held company with revenues that might exceed $100 million, they are likely to have a very different leadership than this guy. Or maybe I should say they have a different leadership challenge. They live in a different reality. Leadership is leadership, or is it? Generally speaking, I think it is, but specifically it's not. Generally speaking, leaders lead. They help their team perform better. They drive performance higher by setting expectations, providing resources, training, accountability, solving problems. The leader can do what others can't. When the team runs into a roadblock, the leader can get them through. And the specifics of how those things get done, well, that's where it can all look very different. And part of it may be style and personality, but that's true in all leadership. A bigger part of it is the how leaders accomplish their work. That may be where the reality check really comes to play. Results, the only thing that matters? Well, as long as people are performing to meet or exceed expectations, what do we care how leadership decides to roll? I mean, why does it matter? Every organization has goals, these measurables that they're chasing. It's the work product produced by all the people. In your company, maybe it's sales, profits, cost-cutting, employee retention, promoting new leaders, market share, roads repaired, parks built, buildings inspected, houses clean, windows washed. You know, it's all the activities that we engage in our enterprise. It's the, what are you doing? What are you doing to make money? What are you doing to get things done. From the most mundane stuff that we do, sorry, you accountants, but like basic accounting, to maybe the most thrilling stuff like managing the roster of an NFL team. It's the work. Does leadership matter if the work gets done? I mean, what do we care? As long as the work gets done, especially if the work gets done well, what difference does it make? This is important. I think this is important when we examine leadership reality because it speaks directly to the realities of leadership importance. And it also speaks to the fact that leadership is more than a moment in time. You know that, though. So you're about midway through, let's say you're 4 or 5 days into October 2015. Does your organization care what August performance was like? What about September? You guys, are y'all still celebrating those sales records you set back in July 2015? In October? No. Past performance does not matter. Nobody seems to care about it. You can build on it. You can use it to help create a high-performing culture. Okay. Maybe true enough. But in the end, it's over. It's done with. It won't guarantee you future success. Performance standards are the unrelenting taskmaster that we all have to serve. Results aren't the only thing that matters. How those results get delivered, yeah, that matters too. Not some subjective, well, I don't like the way he's doing that kind of a thing, but a more substantial way. Maybe it's best summed up in the phrase, what got you here won't get you there. What worked yesterday may not work, probably won't work today. You have likely been part of a great performance 1 month. I guarantee you have. Think about it. But you've also likely been part of a month that was a disaster. I mean, sometimes conditions or circumstances happen that you just can't predict. You certainly can't control. I mean, a natural disaster can happen. A flood, a tornado, any number of other things can hit us with little or no notice, and it can really disrupt our businesses. What do? Well, we manage these times as best we can. Some companies do well during times like that, especially if disaster services is their business or it's part of their business. Now, the rest of us, okay, yeah, we've got to fight our way through it. But there are man-made disasters that can absolutely be avoided. Leadership disasters. That's why you see changes often made among professional sports teams. I mean, just recently, after another embarrassing loss to the New York Jets in front of an international audience at London's Wembley Stadium, the Miami Dolphins, they fired their head coach 4 games into this new NFL season. Joe Philbin is his name. He was fired. Head coach, he'd won 1 game and lost 3 this year. And that was enough for the owner of the Dolphins to say, that's it. That's it. You're done. Philbin never demonstrated success as a top leader, as a head coach. He had 3 full seasons coaching the Miami Dolphins before this year, and he did not have a winning record in any of those years. But prior to that, he was an offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. And there he experienced some success, some leadership success in that role. What got you here won't get you there. Well, let's look at another coach, a college coach, a very successful college coach. Nick Saban. Roll Tide, University of Alabama. Saban has won 3 national championships at Bama. He won another one back before he went to Bama when he was the head coach at LSU. The man knows how to win. In the college game, a team has to be just almost perfect every year to even get a shot at playing in the national championship game. And unless the competition also has a loss, it's just nearly impossible. Nearly impossible to play for a championship, even if you have just had a single loss. Well, in 2015, we're just a few games in, and Alabama already has 1 loss. So has Nick Saban lost his touch as a leader, as a head coach? I don't know. I doubt it. Because unlike Philbin at Miami, Saban has proven, he's proven he has the ability to be at the top. Philbin never did prove that. Saban is an experienced winning top dog. He has performed consistently throughout his entire college coaching career. I've read plenty of stuff about him, and I know that he's a man who believes in the process. I even put a link to a show that I did a good while back over at my other podcast, Leaning Toward Wisdom. If you go to today's show notes, Higher Human Performance, just plug in the number 284 in the search box of the website, and it'll take you to the show notes where you will find a link going back to the episode that I did about process and the importance of process. Saban is a man who is fanatical about the process. But he doesn't resist shaking things up. He doesn't resist doing things in new ways. He doesn't resist being innovative, finding new buttons to push, shaking it up with his staff, shaking it up with his players. I mean, in short, Nick Saban appears adept at doing what must be done to continue to elevate performance. And he appears to have a solid grip on reality. I mean, he's got to have, right? In order to be as good as he is, doesn't he have to really see it, how it really is? Yeah, I think so. I mean, he knows the players. He knows his staff. And maybe most of all, he seems to know himself. He's never relied on past performance to propel him to present or future performances, and you shouldn't either. Adapting, responding to situations, responding to opportunities, reacting, preparing, planning, it's all part of the leadership reality check. And it's not about being optimistic, but nor is it about being pessimistic. It's not about being overly critical, but it's not about being super positive. It's about how things really are with you, the leader, and with your people. I mean, Nick Saban, he can view himself any way he wants, but if his staff and his players see him in a way that puts his leadership in peril, well, then he can take whatever his attitude, whatever his view of himself is, if it's a positive attitude, and he can just shove off. I mean, who cares? What difference does it make? Because people are going to stop responding to his leadership in a way that's going to bring about victories for the University of Alabama. But that has not happened. Not yet. Will it? Not if Nick Saban can help it. And he seems very intent, I might add, on preventing that. And he seems very capable of preventing that. That's the kind of leader that he has proven to be. Style, substance, and how. Now, I'm fanatical about process, and I'm fanatical about workflow. It's one reason that I podcast the way I do, using what is called the broadcast model. That is, I prep and I prep some more. I don't usually just open up the mic and hit record and talk off the top of my head. I mean, most of the time I have spent a few weeks thinking about an episode, and I may write down some thoughts. I may just jot down phrases, even a few sentences every day for a couple of weeks, or I may sit down and I may spend a few hours thinking about what I want to say and how I want to say it. But the work, all that work is on the front end. It's in the preparation. And so by the time I hit record on an episode, I spend very little time getting things published. By the time I finish talking in this episode, if I were to put a stop clock on it, it's going to be no more than 10 minutes before I'm done. I will have already got the audio part of this show, the digital file, the audio, the MP3. I'll have gotten that tagged and uploaded somewhere. And I'll have the blog post already done, and I'll schedule it, and I'll hit schedule or publish, and I'm done. I mean, I promise you it won't take more than 10 minutes because I prefer to do the work up front. Now, other podcasters, some don't like to roll that way. They like to roll in a more casual way up front, and then they're willing to put in tons of work and tons of time on the back end in editing. See, I'd kind of rather pre-edit, if you please. So I constructed my studio and my workflow as a podcaster to fit how I prefer to podcast. It's more than how. It also impacts my style and my substance. Now, the same goes for leaders in an organization. Every leader has a unique personality that often drives the style of the leader. As a podcaster, what I just told you kind of drives my style as a podcaster. How leaders communicate, their preferences, what they hate, what they love, what they like, all those things can differ wildly among leaders, just as they can podcasters. But they don't make a leader good or bad any more than it makes a podcaster good or bad. Saban, he seems to be kind of an all business kind of a guy. Now go across the country, fly clear across the country diagonally up to Seattle, Washington, and you'll find there an ex-college coach named Pete Carroll. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. Should have won it last year. The NFL Seattle Seahawks. Carroll is known. He's known as a loose, fun-loving guy, has a lot of fun with his players. But he was a winner at college back at USC, won national championships with them. He's been a winning head coach for a long, long time. Two contrasting styles, both capable of producing winning football teams, but they don't do it the same way, not at all. Style, substance, and how addresses a central quality, though, I think necessary in effective leaders. And are you ready for it? Because here's the elephant in the room. They're adaptable. They're adaptable. Some will say that great leaders need to be good actors. And I certainly don't object, and I certainly don't mind that characterization. The reality check required of every leader demands that we know and we fully understand the current circumstances. But we have to adjust to those. We have to adapt. We have to overcome. And that means we have to sometimes behave or act differently. Why? Why? Well, that's a huge question. Sometimes our people are just tired. You ever thought of that? You've probably seen that. We've pushed, we've prodded, we've poked, we've cajoled, we've even coerced. And they have performed well. Man, we've got a team, they have done well. But now we're sensing that performance is slipping. And the reality check is necessary so that we properly understand why. Why is it slipping? Why the sudden slip now? Are they losing focus? And if they are, why? Why are they losing focus? Are they working as hard as they were before? Maybe, maybe not. Why? Why aren't they working as hard as they did before? Shame on the leader who neglects the reality check of this question, because it speaks to how the leader should respond. Remember, we've concluded the team's tired, maybe even exhausted. Now, I realize that performance still has to be high. I'm not suggesting that your business or your organization just take a month off and, okay, the troops are tired. Let's relax a little bit. No, it's not possible. You know that's not possible. I'm suggesting that your response as the leader is going to determine what you do to help your people elevate their performance through this challenge. It's not about lowering standards. It's not about tolerating some slackness or some lack of energy in the organization. It's about finding a way to win, knowing that the troops may be running out of steam. Now, you could go into the room and you could holler and you could scream and you could micromanage them. That won't give them the energy that they need. You can run them down below empty. You can, like the car in your driveway, you can drive it until there's just not even fumes left in the gas tank. It's not going to get you very far. You may even create a stream of low performing months on end. And that could affect your leadership. You could reach a point that your leadership won't recover. I'm thinking of you, Coach Philbin. Instead, your reality check is that people are tired. They're still very willing to do the work. These same people, they won big last month. I mean, they didn't just suddenly turn into losers because you reached a new month. They gave it all they had to produce last month's results. You've noticed, though, that they've lost a spring in their step. The energy just seems to be low. And going off on them, that's not what they need. No, instead, your reality check leads you to know precisely what you must do, because you understand why they're struggling, because you know them that well. That's your reality. And you decide to encourage, to inspire, and to cheerlead. Team is still held accountable for a solid performance, but sooner than later, you decide you're not going to let another day go by without addressing the needs of the team. So you gather the team together for a team huddle, and you begin by telling them how proud you are of their performance last month, and you review the current month-to-date performance. You're 4 days in. But you're showing them that even 4 days in, at this current pace, it's not going to meet the target for this month. I mean, they can tell that you're not going to relax the goals. The goal's not moving. The goal is staying the same. We've just got to step up. And instead of berating them, you tell them that you understand they're tired and you want to help. But you want their help in how to maneuver through this current challenge so they don't fall further behind, because that doesn't help anybody. It's a town hall kind of a meeting, but you've held these before, okay? This isn't the first time that you've done this, because if it is, then it's not going to go quite this way, but you're in the habit of this, and your team knows this. Your team is easily engaged in open dialogue and interaction because, well, it's just part of your normal leadership style. They acknowledge that they're tired. They don't mind telling you they're tired, but they also acknowledge that, yes, they believe they can overcome this tiredness and achieve the goals for the month. And before your very eyes, you see their energy elevated as together, in front of you, They're working together to remedy the problem. And somebody opens up their laptop and a spreadsheet measuring the month-to-date performance, and she says, at this rate, we're going to fall 22% short of our target. And so somebody else pipes up and says, well, what does our daily performance need to be to make up for our lost ground? Okay, she plugs in a few keystrokes into her spreadsheet, and she hollers out the answer, and you write that on the whiteboard. And instead of commandeering the room, you don't say anything. You just write that number on the board. And what you're doing is you're opting to just nudge the conversation forward if it's needed. Right now, it's not needed. The team, they're doing pretty well. You're just kind of facilitating. This team needs you, but right now this team's not needing you to nudge it forward. They're doing pretty well on their own, and you decide to just let it roll, and you're smart. They're finding renewed energy in tackling this problem, the problem of their own shortfall this month. The energy in the room, it's evident. These people, they're rallying. It's exactly what you need. It's exactly what you want. It's exactly what you hoped for. And after 10 minutes, they seem to have forgotten how tired they were. They've got a new focus, chasing the goal. They have a new challenge, refusal to let their exhaustion beat them. And it's a rallying point for this entire group of people. They suggest some innovative things that they can do to make up the ground that they've lost. And you encourage them by telling them that they're only 4 days into the month, but they've got plenty of time to recover. And you remind them that it's how the month ends that's going to determine our success, not how it begins. And then you ask them, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? And some of them, they ask you to give them a new daily dashboard so they can know multiple times during the day how they're doing. Now, their normal dashboard isn't updated quite that often. But you agree that, oh, yeah, good idea. Under these circumstances, I'll make that happen for you guys. I mean, come on. This just shows their dedication to stay on top of their performance. Your leadership reality check proved the team was tired and that they needed you to spark them. You needed not to reprimand them, not to call them on the carpet, not to tell them what a lousy, stinking job they were doing. No, now they're owning their performance, and they're energized to make it happen. Within 36 hours of this town hall meeting, they're performing at a rate that's going to give them a performance 5% above their target. Now, you're smart enough, and you're experienced enough, you know that may not be sustainable. But man alive, you keep cheerleading him every time there's a new update that hits that dashboard. Nobody's slacking. Everybody's on board. Your leadership reality check has given you the opportunity to make the team even stronger than before. All because you dare to ask, why is this happening? And also because you spent time asking what you could do to remedy it. It's not you. It's them. Effective leaders don't make it about themselves. They make it about their people. It's the biggest part of the leadership reality check. It's also why too many leaders fail to get a good grip on their people. They're always chasing that elusive question of how their people feel or what they're thinking or about anything else about their organization. They're not spending enough time with and among their people. If that leader who held that town hall meeting didn't really know these people, do you think he'd have handled that situation like he did? Well, maybe better asked, do you think they would have responded like they did? Guarantee you they wouldn't have. But they just knew that this is the way he rolls. This is how he does it. And boy, there's power in that how, isn't there? He'd likely have dealt with these people in a very heavy-handed way if that had not been his normal way of doing business. He'd have gone in, he'd have pushed them, he'd have shoved them around, he'd have coerced, he would have instilled as much fear as possible thinking that's going to help, because that's what most leaders do. And he would have been terribly wrong. Potentially, he would have broken down a group of people that were otherwise capable of high performance that were just tired. He would have made it all about him, all about his leadership, and all about his perceived strength in making people perform. Listen, effective leaders don't make people do things. They help people get things done better. That's the reality of it. And the sooner you understand that it's about them, not you, well, the sooner you'll be on the road to becoming a more effective leader. Every group needs leadership. Leadership that is willing and capable of looking at reality in the face, staring it down, and refusing to blink. Leadership willing to look in the mirror and realize what must be done under the circumstances. Leadership capable of seeing the present distress or opportunity and knowing what service may be most needed by the team. At the end of the month, the team achieved the target plus 7% more. They were exhausted at day 5, but thanks to an effective leader who could see the future first, they were energized. They rose to the occasion because their leader first believed in them. He believed in them first, and that made them believe in themselves. Yeah, they believed in him too. His vision of the future spurred them to find a new kick in their energy. He didn't make the month happen. They did. He helped. But it was never about him. It was only about what he could do to serve them. And that's the elephant in the room. That's the leadership reality check. It ain't about you. It's about them. It's about their work. And it's about what you can do to help them do their work better. That's it. That's episode 284 of Higher Human Performance, the podcast. I'm glad that you clicked play. I hope that something was said to provoke your thought, maybe even provoke you to some different activity in your leadership. Visit the website, won't you? HigherHumanPerformance.com. It'll take you to my company website, which is Bula, B-U-L-A Network. Bula is a Fiji term, means hello and goodbye. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. I'm not from Fiji, but I fell in love with the term about 30 years ago. And I just, why not name my company after it? Network in the sense of a variety of services that I used to offer. I'm kind of narrowing it down. It pretty much is executive and leadership coaching these days. If I can serve you, all kinds of ways you can check out who and what I am over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. I'm from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. My name is Randy Cantrell, and I'm coming to you from inside the Yellow Studio.